You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 5, Episode 32, coming your way this week. Kieran Burke, John Breyer and Gary Riley, we're all back this week, and we've got an awful lot to get through. Just to start this week's show though, a massive thank you to everybody that tuned into the Joy in Those special last week. You could say, welcome to podcast heaven.
Wow.
Welcome to heaven.
I didn't see that one coming. Wow. Podcast heaven. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well. No. I have to give you that one. That I never heard that one. Wow. Podcast heaven. Wow. That's good.
Yeah, we'll be bringing you a couple of little teasers, a couple of little clips for anyone that didn't listen to the special, didn't get a chance yet. We'll bring you a couple of clips with Joy. But a huge thanks to everyone that tuned in. It was very, very popular. But as popular as it was, lads, we got a couple of messages in during the week saying I missed listening to yourselves and the bit of crack and bit of debate. So we've got a slightly different format than usual this week. Usually we'd have two or three guests on with us, but it's just us three this week because we're going to thrash out everything we've missed over the last couple of weeks because we've got a lot to get through. We're going to start the show with a bit of a chalkboard and go through different topics, and obviously the one that's at the very top from a Longford Town perspective, lads, is Dara Doyle departing the club. And I suppose, John, you were maybe one out of the three of us during the year. You signalled a few times that you might like to see a change at the club. The change has now taken place. How do you reflect on it?
Well, gutted that it just didn't work out for Dara, because I think everybody around the club, you know, found him such a likeable character, and I think everybody wished him well. But for whatever reason, this season, recruitment, budget, I don't know, it just hasn't worked. And look, I mean, we're miles away from the standard we were supposed to be this season. We've 14 points, 2 wins on the board. We're a country mile off the playoff even. You know, so it's a really, really disappointing season. So I, from my point of view, I think it was that change had to happen. I'm just surprised that Longford left it so late in the season. If you look at the bounce that Waterford had when they brought in Bertram, it's just huge. And although they're not out of the mire yet, they're a lot better than where they were at the time. So I think if things had been done different, you know, if change had been made earlier, then there could have been an opportunity for Longford to improve. But unfortunately, and like I say, I am really disappointed because I really wanted Dara to do well. You know, I loved what he did last season, but I think it's just not happened for him. And you know, I think the sad thing is some of the players weren't able to step up from the first division to the top division level.
There's no doubt about that. But just interesting to pick up on what you said there about Waterford made the change halfway through the season and brought Mark Bertram in. I was writing about Mark Bertram today for the program this weekend, and I was saying, I think even ourselves on this show, we're probably guilty at times. We talk about Mark Bertram and his man management and personality and the energy he's brought to the club, but you kind of brush over the fact that it was really good investment in terms of recruitment made at the halfway stage. Gary's been at a couple of games. He'll tell us in a minute about Phoenix Patterson and what a great find he's been. Junior, there's been other players that have come in there. So I would disagree that if you just changed Dara Doyle, things would change, because the simple fact, John, is, I think you'll agree with me, the budget clearly wasn't there. And I know some people will be critical maybe of some of the recruitment, some of the players Dara signed, but you can only sign the players, you know, if you're shopping in a certain market, they're the players that are there. The budget, as far as I'm concerned, wasn't there from a Longford Town point of view.
No, but he had the players long enough and a formula long enough to work something out and perform better than they did.
But they weren't good. The players he brought in weren't good enough.
You know, we talked about corners over and over again and vulnerability to crosses, set pieces. And, you know, it was like it was never fixed. I was very frustrated at a recent home match where we conceded yet again from a corner. And it just seemed to be the same weaknesses all the time.
If the parents aren't good enough, though, you're always going to have that leak, no?
Yeah, well, that is true. But I think there was a reliance on players who, for me, were never ever going to be able to step up to the grades. You're talking about we had very, very little experience in that team from the top league. It was all first division and junior football. And okay, that could be to do with the budget, as you said.
But it is because Darragh Doyle has publicly stated in interviews, you know, he kind of pointed at Drogheda and some of the players they brought in. He publicly admitted they were players that Longford would have liked to have brought in, but Drogheda having the 3 weeks ahead of them and having a few more pounds, it wasn't possible.
But that's no excuse for getting the tactics wrong time after time. And in my opinion, and, you know, we said lots of times the shape wasn't right. Playing Manly out in the wing is just crazy. I don't know where that's come from. Playing our, you know, captain at fullback when he's a centre midfielder. I just, there was a lot of decisions that left us supporters perplexed, shall we say. Yeah. Now, we made some good decisions bringing in the likes of Dean Williams and that, but I think when you look at the team and you talked about the overall quality, the best players, as you say, were lone players, and I just don't think they ever had the quality. And unfortunately, you know, somebody has to pay the price for it, and it's the manager.
We'll bring Gary in here. Gary, John there says the tactics weren't right. Me and you have seen more of Longford and obviously James as well than anyone this year, and we've done some miles to go and look at them. But there's been games where defensively they've been really well organised. We go back to the Sligo game last Monday. I was obviously working at the game commentating for Ocean FM. I was working with Gavin Dykes, and everyone in the press box, even all the Sligo fans I met on the way out, said, you didn't deserve that. They said, not only were you well organised, but that was actually one of the best footballing performances I've seen in the showgrounds this year, that you played some really good stuff on the counter-attack. Now, I know every performance hasn't been like that, but even you look at, I know Dara wasn't in charge on Sunday, but again, Oriel, it was a fairly similar setup. It was a kind of a Darragh Doyle setup. They sat in, they were as organised as they could be. They just didn't have the quality going forward. So did he get the tactics wrong, or was he just simply working with what he had?
Well, I suppose in Dara's position, a lot of other managers wouldn't have got as long as he did, considering the results and the position on the table. So, you know, there's a lot to go through with Longford this year and Darragh Doyle's performance. You have to look at, you know, a few games there have certainly been issues with, you know, staying power. Can we not hold on to results? You saw that with three out of the four Shamrock Rovers games, even Sligo last Monday. You know, a lot of disappointing results coming towards the end of games, and that obviously hurt. But I think, as one of our friends would say, has said on numerous occasions, would all of those results have made much of a difference in the league? No, we wouldn't have gathered up what an extra 24 odd points or however far Longford are behind to stay in the division. I think Dara, you know, I said it at the start of the season that Longford Town would have gone down or would go down hugging and kissing every team that they come up against.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, is what has happened. They've been extremely poor in managing the game, extremely poor in dealing with the referee, getting walked all over in games and getting treated like almost like children when it comes to the referee. But those are things that have been highlighted so many times by us. I'm not saying that Dara should have listened to those clowns at all, but like, those are issues, you know, and he could see that there. You know, he saw it recently against Drogheda, Gary Deegan running the show, Craig Bulger, Gary Buckley there last week in Sligo. You know, it's just even poor management.
Even Sunday again, I know he wasn't in charge Sunday, but me and you at the game in Dundalk, it's either Murray or Sloggett that goes down injured. It's not a serious injury. They played on. I think They just strained something. Longford on the attack, and one or two shouts to put the ball out, and they just stop and put the ball out instead of just getting on
absolutely
with the job.
Pathetic.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, pure soft. But that has been probably...
Again, though,
a lacking in Dara, though.
I'd agree. And how much can he do about it if the characters aren't there within the dressing room?
Because, well, it's very simple. Dara isn't being ruthless in the dressing room, or wasn't being ruthless in the dressing room. So, and you know, we, you know, that's not something that is brand new information. That is something that I certainly taught this year, where players get a pass for making mistakes on a regular basis. You know, even on Sunday, people weren't in their positions for the goals. they weren't doing the right thing. They were not doing their jobs, essentially. And that's what caused Longford Town 2 goals, because they played all right on Sunday. Mm. Wasn't the, you know, pure champagne football at all. But getting back to Dara, like, you could argue, I think it's a fact that he wasn't ruthless enough, and he probably would admit that himself. There was too many friendly, you know, you interviewed him a lot this season for Longford Town Media and for the pod as well, and there was just too much niceness going on. You know, players are making mistakes the last 5 or 6 games. They need to be called out.
Yeah, because it's interesting. John was referenced in Mark Bartram there. Bartram, we've all spoke about his positivity and everything since he's come in. He tore shreds off his players at the weekend when they, you know, played very well in the first half against the champions, were one up, and they concede 3 goals, which could happen to any team against Shamrock Rovers. And he absolutely tore shreds off the players. He said he was disgusted with them, disgusted with their performance, and if they defend like that in the last 2 games, they won't stay in this league. And I actually, you know, he's taking a risk there, because you could sour a couple of players, maybe you lose them. But I think that's probably what the players have needed, because they've been on this great run of form, this great wave since he came in. But now it's getting to the business end. He needs them to be known, you know, this is a waste of time, what we've done the last 4 months, if we're just going to concede stupid goals in the last couple of games. And
Darren, that's about setting your expectations high, though. And that's something we didn't have. That is him saying, we are gonna beat Rovers, you know, and I'm absolutely disgusted with the defending to give that game away. So
I'd agree with Gary. I think we could all agree there probably wasn't enough of that. But look, we could all debate the merits of where he went wrong and where he went right without through the year and last year or whatever else. But John, I suppose the timing may be a little bit strange. Only 3 games to go. You know, should he have been allowed to see the season out given what he had achieved? It'd be different if the club had someone in mind and they appointed them and they took over for the last couple of games, have a look and see what they're working with, who they want to keep, who they don't. But it's obvious from the fact that they're publicly looking for applications that, you know, this is now an open process. Whoever wants to apply can apply. So they haven't got one man in mind, it seems. So should Darren not have been allowed to see the season out given what he'd done for the club?
Well, I think it was quite clear that there must have been some meeting, and, you know, he was obviously told he wouldn't be kept on next season, so there's no point staying on. What's to gain? You know, the club's already relegated, so I think that's probably what's happened there. You know, and that's why there's been nobody in place to come in. But you
could argue why didn't he get the end of the season, or as you maybe would argue, why wasn't this done 6 or 7 or 8 weeks ago? So is the
it should have been done.
Timing a little bit strange.
Well, it is, unless they're talking about plans for the next season, and, you know, there's obviously Dara's not been in the plans as such, but you know, I don't really know how Longford Town work as a football club or things like that, but you know, it's quite clearly that something happened, and you know, it was probably told that he wouldn't be in charge next season, so the decision was made to part the ways.
I suppose the big question is now, Gary, have you got a particular name that if you were the man picking his successor, is there a particular name on your shortlist?
Not really. You know, of course, I'm very disappointed that Dara isn't the manager of Longford Town. You know, we had a very good couple of years, particularly during the pandemic. We were blessed to get to go to as many games as we did and streaming and all that stuff. And yeah, we're in great contact with Darren. He is going to be a loss on a personal note around the club. Do you know what I mean? So that is not good. But I haven't really considered it, to be honest, because I'm kind of wore out over the season. You know, we're looking at mistakes week in, week out that haven't been rectified. John, you highlighted them earlier. You'd nearly be afraid of the opposition keeper having a goal kick, because we're probably going to concede from it. Any type of set piece in any shape or form was a danger.
I think something you said a couple of weeks ago on the show here was very true. You know, we've tried everything. We've talked about doing this. We've tried 2 up front. We've tried Manly on the wing. We've tried different goalkeepers. We've done everything. And it just simply was the fact that we weren't good enough. And, you know, that's very tiring. And as you said, when you're traveling to all these games week in, week out, when you're one of the last in or one of the last out, it is very, very tiring. It does wear you down.
No, it does, certainly. I I think the players that we have are actually worth more points that have been returned on the board. I haven't looked at them so often this year. I genuinely believe that. I think Dara made some poor decisions in recruitment. I'm not going to highlight any players in particular. I think everyone knows. I think some of them have been extremely, extremely bad decisions. And we actually said it last year. Now, I know this is actually funny. We said that Dara needed to be shopping at a higher level than what he got in. And yes, Drogheda being promoted 3 weeks ahead of Longford last season, we would have been shopping in the same aisle, let's say.
Yeah.
And we were hoping that Dara wouldn't be shopping in the first division where we just came out of or lower. It actually turned out that Aaron Robinson was one of the better players that he has brought in, and that was from the Leinster Senior League level. Of course, I can't talk about any player about Longford Down without mentioning Aaron O'Driscoll. Unbelievable player, will go on to do great things in the league, but just to put a cap on it, I don't think Dara can be overly surprised, because just the recruitment was just horrendous. And that was ultimately his downfall. And then go back to your first question. No, I don't really see. I don't really have anyone in mind. I think it's a low risk enough, probably at the moment. Longford Town are doing, you know, well enough off the pitch and maintaining a good status off the pitch that, you know, they could probably take a bit of a risk with someone else coming in. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah, we'll move on from this in a second. I don't want to turn into a Longford Town podcast, but John, just would there be a name on your mind at all?
No, I'm struggling to think who we could get in. I think we've had a few, you know, surprise appointments, really, when you look at Fenn and maybe to an extent Dara Doyle as well. But
I get the feeling that's the route. I don't know anything, but I just get the feeling it might be someone from maybe outside of the league, because if you think of who's available at the moment within the league, there's no one that really springs to mind.
No, there isn't.
And, the one for me, to be honest, the one, I don't like name dropping people on the show, and you know, I have no idea whether they're interested in the job or not. But for me, I think Declan Devine is one man that's out of work at the moment. That good man manager. I think he's probably got good contacts in the league as well. But whether he wants to relocate or travel to Dublin, I that probably rules him out. I don't know. I don't know what his intentions are. But he'd be one name on the list if you could get him in some sort of scenario. I think he'd definitely be a name I'd consider.
Yeah, just on that though, like, yeah, he lives in Derry. What is he going to do? Wait for the Derry job to come back available again? He's going to have to travel, like that. That's make no mistake about that. So, if he's worried about that, then you know he's going to have to look at the Northern Irish Football League and maybe lower down the levels up around there. So, if he wants to remain in the Premier Division, he's going to have to look a bit further afield than where he is currently at the moment. Wouldn't be on top of my list.
Really?
No.
Okay. Look, we'll move on from this, I suppose, just from my own personal perspective on it all. I know most people will probably disagree with me. They'll probably say I have a personal bias towards Dara as well. But for me, I think it's the wrong decision. I think it was a very young team that went up lacking in experience. I think he should have been given next year to see could he get the club back and learn from this experience. But look, as I said, this is football. This is what happens. We're going to have disagreements. Managers are going to leave clubs, and that's the way it is. But I think the unanimous feeling amongst all three of us is we're very, very sorry to see Dara leave. An absolute gentleman, very good to this show, very good to all three of us personally. And look, I've written my feelings on it in several different places. So thanks to Dara for everything he did for the club and for BTS and for myself personally. So, very sad to see him go, but look, I suppose that's football, and I'm sure he'll go on to better things. But we'll move on, lads. A different stratosphere altogether. Damien Duff, a Premier League, two-time Premier League winner, new manager Shelburne, John Breyer.
Well, and what a coup, really, I suppose, isn't it? You know, you look at his CV and his past, and you think that's a fantastic boost for them. It was a bit of a shock, obviously, the manager leaving. You know, just how well they were promoted. Well, I think so, you know, because
I think you were very easily. I think you missed the show that me and Gary discussed this on. Neither of us were surprised.
Well, yeah.
And even Stephen Henderson was on with us and he said it was an open secret within the club.
Yeah, I did hear that, obviously. But, you know, I suppose, you know, how many managers are sacked after winning the league by, you know, double figures or whatever he's going to win the league by. So, and there's probably not many. But, you know, in Duff, I don't know. His sound bites have been interesting, shall we say, so far, haven't they? So...
yeah, I have to be honest. Some of his sound bites have worried me. There was one where he said
he's overly negative about the league and the setup.
Yeah, I'd worry about he's going on about standards and stuff. Are little things going to bother him? Now, look, Shelburne is in a much better place than it was 10 years ago, so I'm sure whatever he wants will be there. But I would just worry. Are certain training facilities and you know, bad pitches in the league, is that going to, and referees, which we're always going on about, how is he going to cope with that? And not only that, but he made a comment as well that he had to try this, and someone pointed out, you know, that if managers get the first job, if they get sacked from the first job within a certain time, I think something like 90 something percent of them don't get another job. And he said, if I don't get another job, I'm happy to be a barista. And I just thought that was a strange comment. Like, you know, how much does he want this?
Yeah, you'd be looking for someone to say, I'm going to be a success and, you know, I'm going to, you know, take this club to new levels that it hasn't seen for a number of years and the likes. Not I'm going to go and make coffee. That's not what I expected, to be honest.
No, I just thought that was a strange one for me. But
I think clearly... It's not a big gamble to him. I think he can go in quite relaxed to it. I think that's the way he's trying to do it, trying to take the pressure off him. But I think he'd probably see this as a stepping stone to maybe manage at a higher level. That's no disrespect to the league and the likes, but I think this is probably the first step on the ladder, and he's done well to get Shelburne first step. So, and I think that's probably on reputation now. How he goes as a manager, there's been plenty in the past of great footballers but don't necessarily make great managers.
Yeah, to be fair to Duff, he's got quite a good CV. You know, obviously he had the gig with Celtic where he was very highly respected, and he's been managing here at underage level with Shamrock Rovers and with Shelburne, so it's not like he's a total stranger to the league.
Yeah, but he's not taken the reins himself yet, has he? This is his first job, so...
No, but... It's just
a gamble, isn't it? All round.
Just to pick up on what you said about him maybe using this as a stepping stone to go on to bigger and better things, he has spoken about one of the reason he left Celtic was he wanted to come home to Ireland, and it was just very difficult being away from the family and everything. So, I mean, this is a perfect opportunity for him to see what he can do at senior level and you know, live and work in Ireland. So, I suppose, Gary, there's been a lot of talk about this being great for the league and great for the profile of the league. How big is it for the league, really?
Look, it's definitely, you know, a boost to the profile, make no mistake. I don't think his comments have helped. To be honest with you, I don't think he's going to last very long in the job. He doesn't seem to want it that much. I'm most likely completely wrong about it, but...
No, just the reason I ask is because, obviously, when most of us are all in the same boat, there might be one or two League of Ireland fans we meet on a weekly basis, but... Generally, there's not a huge amount of them dotted around. So sometimes at work, people will say to me, oh, I seen this happen in the league, the firework incident. That was something several people asked me about. We'll come to that later. But I said it in work the other day. I said, oh, did any of you hear Damien Duff is the new Shells manager? And they were just like, all right, no one was really overly interested or really cared about it, to be honest.
Yeah, like... I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's Shelburne getting another manager. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, just... It's great that you know, it's a high profile person like Damien Duff, and he did
play in the league for a little while as well, we have to remember, so he's not totally new news to the league, is he?
No, he's not, but you know, he kind of played, you know, what did he play, a few months for Shamrock Rovers when he came back. You know, wasn't exactly a huge career in the league either, but I think some of his comments, you mentioned the one already about the barista stuff. I was just like, what is this fella at? Like, I'm not really sure. I don't think
it wasn't exactly, you know, I'm going to give everything to make this a success. It was just like, you know, I'm going to give this a go. And if it doesn't work, well, I don't really care because
pretty much, yeah. You know, so
I'm probably going to be, I'm probably okay financially.
Yeah. But like money aside, that isn't really a concern. You know, you don't go into the League of Ireland for money. So I think the real issue is, you know, why is he here at all? It's good that he got the job. I know he started a bit of a clear out already. And it does, it will boost the profile of Shelburne, make no mistake, but just to see how interested he is in it, and starting, you know, making those comments in your press conference, you know, your announcement press conference was a bit odd, but look, time will tell. He's an unknown entity at this level of the game. Like
even the whole thing about, you know, GA clubs having better facilities and all that, that's not really your concern at this moment in time. You're newly promoted. Your concern is to keep Shells in the Premier League next season, or, you know, Ian Morris, you know, we've seen what happened with him. So I just thought it was strange to go down that path.
Yeah, it definitely didn't help him, and certainly didn't sit really well with me. Not that I'm going to die in a ditch about Shelburne, but at the same time, I still want clubs to do well. Obviously not for town number one, but do you know what I mean? I still want clubs to be relatively successful and stable and all of that type of thing. So make no mistake, I'm glad that it's a high, you know, former international, a well-respected and, you know, great player for Ireland in his day. It's a good thing, but how much he wants to do it, you know, is he going to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning worrying about what he's going to do tomorrow on the training pitch? Who knows? But time will tell on it. But yeah, his comments didn't really sit well with me, and I'll be looking at it closely.
We'll move on. Another kind of strange interview. Paul Doolan was on LOI Central during the week, John, and he said the reason he's left that loan is he just couldn't hack the driving. Do you think he'll get a job again within the league?
Don't know. He was out of action for a while, wasn't he? Before,
yeah, and he spoke about, you know, not getting opportunity since he left. He got an opportunity here. It seems like Athlone were keen to keep him on, and he just didn't fancy it.
Yeah, no, I should say I didn't hear the interview, Kieran. It seems a bit of a funny one, doesn't it? If that's the case, where's he driving from?
Dublin.
Yeah, that's no distance, is it, to Athlone? I don't know. It's a very strange one. I'm presuming they're paying for his diesel. Although, with the price at the moment, they might not be there. Maybe that's the issue. Who knows? But it's a strange one.
Replaced today by Martin Russell. What do you make of that as an appointment? Would you have liked to have seen him at Longford, maybe?
I'm not sure. I think he's always been a decent manager, Russell. I think he... he did well with, was it UCD he was at to start with?
Yeah.
I know he was assistant manager there. And yeah, I think he kept them in the top league 3 or 4 seasons, Russell did. And then obviously Limerick, when he joined Limerick, I think he did well to keep them up. I think they lost the playoff the next year. But my memories would be of him winning the league by, you know, in no time, by a milestone and by a mile in that. Can't remember, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago with Limerick, but I don't think he's done too much since. He got caught up in a Bray when there was all the financial problems there, and they're going to have the training ground like Barcelona and all that kind of thing. So that didn't last too long, and then this very short spell with, and then obviously now 3 years later Athlone. So I think he's a decent manager. He knows the league, and. I think he'll do okay there, Kieran. Although he's already lost a couple of players, hasn't he? I see James Doon has gone to Cork. I think there's somebody else that left as well. So there's obviously going to be, yet again, with a lot of these clubs are rebuilding the close season. I'd be interested to see how they go next season.
He's always struck me, Martin Russell, as, you know, a manager that plays very good open football, but at the back very, very leaky. So. That was kind of Athlone's problem this year, Gary. So I'm not sure he's the man that's going to rectify that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to go back to Paul Doolan, like, I thought, you know, utter rubbish talking about driving down. Like, sure, he knew where Athlone was before he applied for the job or was asked about the job in the first place. there's probably a bit more to it than that.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
So I wouldn't really put much stock in any of that.
You think you would have come up with something a little bit better though, wouldn't you?
I mean,
it doesn't do you any favours down the line. Say if he did apply for the Longford job, well, I know Longford train in Dublin, but is the drive down to Bishopsgate every couple of weeks going to be too much?
I'd be extremely surprised if Paul Doonan is on the radar for Longford Town. I wouldn't be delighted about it myself either.
No.
For Martin Russell, I think, has he been that much lately, has he?
He hasn't been in the league for a couple of years, John, has he?
No, 3 years, I think, since he was at Bray, and it was a very short time at Bray. I don't know if you remember, Kelly was there and he didn't have the qualifications. Was it, what was his name? Was it Graham Kelly, I think, was caretaker manager, and then he went in there, and I think everything went, there was financial problems at the club, and all sorts was going on there, and yeah, since there, I don't know what he's been doing since there, but he hasn't been managing a club in the league anyway.
Yeah, so I think he's a free shot enough, you know what I mean? Like, if they had started so well kind of last year and then kind of really faded off in the middle part and then couldn't really rectify it as time went on. So
I suppose just the big question will be, what will the level of investment on the field be this year? There was a sizable investment this year. It didn't work out. So
yeah,
are they going to throw more money after money, or is there going to be maybe a bit more back to basics, few local players, or what's the plan? So we'll have to wait and see, but an interesting week at that loan nonetheless. Right, let's move on and talk about something else on our chalkboard here. And it's one I referenced a few minutes ago, because had several people that don't follow the league ask me about this, but the fireworks incident in the RSC the other night, John, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, shocking scenes, really, isn't it? I think there's a lot of questions, isn't there? How did they get into the ground? But what is the mentality of somebody that goes to a football match, brings fireworks to blast it at the players on the pitch? It just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
The sad thing is, I'm not surprised, and I don't mean that in regards to the club that's involved here, but I had seen this happen a couple of times over the last few weeks, and it was actually something I meant to raise on the podcast a few weeks ago, because a game that me and Gary were both at together, I saw it happen. It happened in Oriel Park when Dundalk were playing Shamrock Rovers, and it was from the Dundalk end. There was a firework launched out over the pitch, but I just thought it was so dangerous that just something small has to go wrong. That firework has to just slightly go off course, hit someone in the face, take their eye out or a head, and you know, I just think anyone to even think the possibility, I'm going to shoot a firework here surrounded by hundreds of people, it is absolutely brain dead. It's absolutely incredibly stupid. And I think maybe initially myself and a few other people were maybe annoyed with Rovers on the night that they didn't maybe say something on social media. But in fairness to them, they've come out since then with a statement and they've promised to ban these two idiots for life. So that's definitely the stance to take. But I think going forward, this is something clubs really need to look at, because we go on about pyro and how much it adds to the occasion and everything, and it certainly does. But over the last while, I've become very concerned at some games that I've been at, that I've seen a lot of young fellas handling pyro and they just haven't a clue what they're doing with it. They're waving it around like lunatics. I've seen several lads nearly set themselves on fire over the last while. It's something seriously bad is going to happen, and I hope it's not going to take something extremely bad to happen in the ground before this is looked at. Is there a place, Gary, to be said that if the FAI could work with maybe the authorities to come up with some sort of safe handling of pyro, that there's something there that can be done? Or do we just need to have a total zero tolerance policy, and unfortunately the good side of it is just going to have to be put aside, because the small minority, just the dangerous element is too much?
I don't think the FAI have far greater issues to worry about, rather than worrying about how we're going to have safer pyro and or whatever like that.
The reason I ask it is because I've seen a lot of people say it online that it has been introduced in some leagues in Europe, and I think in the States as well, they have pyro zones in stadiums. Is this something that could be considered here, or what's the approach here? Because as I said, it shouldn't get to a stage where something serious happens within the stadium before we have a sit down and chat about this.
No. I think yes, that's great. Get pyro, get whatever. But the FEI, that's not in their on their radar at all right now, and it shouldn't be. At the moment, pyro is banned from the stadium. That's great. That's what it probably should be at the moment. We don't have enough people with enough brains that are using pyro to be able to use it properly, as you highlighted. We've seen it down in Dundalk against Rovers. Somebody could have had the back of his head blown off him.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have had a clue before it happened. Because it's just, you know, we talked about it at the time with some young fella with a flare, or gets a bit warm in his hand and he throws it down and he's not looking at what he's at. And then someone gets a, you know, even if it's a minor burn, it's still a pain in the ass. You know, even if there's no lasting issues. So I think what we need to really worry about is everyone's policed very heavily going into grounds and stuff like that. There isn't that many people going to games. Do you know what I mean? I, for my sins, unfortunately, and not by design, was at the Manchester Derby at the weekend. I was checked like two or three times heading into the stadium, twice anyway. And one was with a, you know, a metal detector, you know, body checker thing. So, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. However, what happened on Friday was disgraceful behavior.
Well, it's interesting because I saw a couple of Rovers fans online and they were pointing out, you know, that these two individuals were quickly pointed out by the Rovers fans and they were thrown into the back of a guard's car or whatever. But there was fireworks launched at Longford.
Mm.
And no, why weren't they pulled out then? Is it because it didn't go wrong? It shouldn't, as I said, it shouldn't take something to go wrong for action to be two idiot or an idiot, someone in Longford launched fireworks on what was a very bad night weather-wise. That was a night where something could have gone wrong. It could have easily gone off course. Luckily, it didn't. But there was a number of fireworks launched that night from the away end.
Hmm.
And why didn't something happen there?
Well, like we'll say, like they were out on their own. Or, you know, it wasn't a covered over area. No one was hit by any debris on the pitch. But I didn't hear any Rovers fans or anybody saying that shouldn't be done. I didn't see any of that. I seen plenty of stuff. Oh, what about this? What about that? About other clubs.
A League of Ireland fans are very good at that whataboutery, though, I have to say. Anytime something like this happens, that's the problem. That's why nothing ever gets dealt with, because it's never our fans, it's never this, it's never that.
It's a small minority, though. Yeah, not Rovers fans, not this, not that, nor the other. Lads, you need to sort it out. You need to police it, because you're making a show of yourselves. You know, utter rubbish. We all saw what it was. People from outside of the league that have no were asking me about it as well. It's just not good enough.
It's not good for the league. It's not good for the league. I've seen a lot of Waterford fans saying there was a lot of young kids that came out to the game and their first Waterford game maybe ever, or since, you know, the COVID restrictions were lifted, and a lot of them were in tears with some of the stuff that was going on. So it's not a good image for the league. But look, we'll move on. Another kind of serious topic to discuss. I'm sure you've seen this in the news about the referees in some of the schoolboy leagues in Dublin, but they're withdrawing their services this weekend. In regards to some of the abuse that they've had thrown at them, and there's I think up to 500 games that are affected. So this is actually something I referenced on the show quite a long time ago, that the whole structure at grassroots level is why we have such a lack of quality referees at League of Ireland level, John, because there's not enough referees been produced. I was reading an article in regards to this, and one of the chairmen of the leagues was saying that, you know, in the last 4 months alone, that two or three referees that had only started quit after a few games because of the abuse that was been thrown at them. There doesn't seem to be a great emphasis on developing referees at grassroots level, and this type of behaviour isn't helping at all.
No, I see there was a course recently for people that were interested in being for refs around the Midlands area. Now, I don't know what kind of numbers they got as a result, but for me...
Did you have to pay out of interest?
You'd have to be crazy.
Did you have to pay?
Sorry?
Did you have to pay for the course?
Oh, I don't know. Because I don't know
The FEI released one during COVID. It was going to be an online course, and I was amazed to see it. It was, I think, €50.
Yeah,
This is a time when they're crying out for referees.
Yeah, and why would you, you know, from my point of view, why would you be mad enough to go and actually say, right, I'm going to stand on a football pitch for 90 minutes, run up and down. Okay, it might be good for my fitness, but I'm going to get abuse hurled at me for the guts of 90 minutes. You know, it's just, and then that's, you know, we can say how good we are as supporters all the time, but, you know, and refs to an extent don't help themselves, but the amount of abuse they get from players, from fans and stuff, you know, who would want to do that job?
Well, I make no mistake, John, they don't get it from the young players.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. They get from the fans, all right. Yeah. What fans well, turn up.
You know, a lot of people are massively missing the point on this. Again, probably social media maybe isn't the best guide to be going off, but I was just looking at the comments under some of the articles when the refs announced they were going on strike, and people were saying, it's because the League of Ireland referees are crap. This has nothing to do with League of Ireland. This is the grassroots. This is under 8s games, under 10s games. I've seen it. I've been the ref. And the carry-on of people that are supposed to be coaches, that are supposed to be developing players, the carry-on of some of the parents, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's mind-boggling, some of the stuff. I could tell stories here. We could do a whole podcast on some of the absolutely crazy stuff I've heard and I've seen and that has happened. There needs to be
I think we saw that in our brief management career.
There needs to be a systematic look at the whole thing from top to bottom. There needs to be a review of grassroots. What can we do? I know in England that they've tried silent sidelines and making parents and coaches sign agreements that they will respect the referees and all the rest. We need to look at something here seriously. And then, as I said, we need to look at the actual the refereeing education that's in place from the FAI, the structures in terms of if I'm starting out at a beginner's course, how do I get to this level where I can referee at a certain level? There's none of that in place. It's just all over the place. It's typical Irish football. It's like a hen's foot. And until that changes, then we're going to have more of these situations with referees going on strike. And eventually it's going to reach the top level and League of Ireland games will be affected.
Funny you should talk about this, Kieran, because I was over in England a few weeks ago and I actually saw this. I went to watch one of my friends, his lad was playing in an under-11s match.
Right.
But this was sort of like a top-level academies match. It was Wakefield against York City Academy. And not a word was allowed from the sideline.
Yeah.
Not a single word. You couldn't shout anything about, you encourage your son, anything like that. There was nothing. Because you would be put out. And parents knew that. And, you know, there was not a word to the referee from either the club or, you know, the coaches or the parents. Very different atmosphere. I was very taken back by it from what I was used to. But, you know, I suppose it worked and the referee just got on with her job and, you know, there was no issues.
Yeah, not only is that good for the referees, it's good for the players because, again, John, we've seen it during our brief managerial time in Longford District Schoolboy League, but the ball comes to a kid and next thing there's a parent on the sideline, kick it, boot it away. And the child panics and, you know, every time they get the ball, it's a panic and they're looking to lump the ball as far as they can. There's no encouraging the players to take your time, get on the ball, look up, pass the ball. It's just the whole grassroots level, we're still miles behind.
And I think that was a lot to do with clarity for the instructions from the coaches as well, that the coaches had probably instructed, you know, the parents as well. You know, on that side of things, so that the actual coach can get, you know, I was talking about the coach at this match was an ex-professional. So, you know, we played for the likes of Man City. So you could see that there was a lot of respect there and a lot of respect from the parents and a lot of respect towards the referee and just very, very different from what you'd be used to.
Yeah, definitely something that needs to be examined, if you ask me. Gary, a topic that I'm keen to ask you on because, let's be honest, you've torn shreds off them for quite a large portion of this season, but Sligo Rovers qualifying for Europe at the weekend.
Yeah, I think I've been 100% correct in tearing strips off them this year. They've been pathetic for half the season. I don't think that's really up for discussion, really. They've managed to pull up their pants in the last few games. Longford made it very hard work for them last Monday, but they had a good win at the weekend, so they've managed to get the show back on the road, but it's still a very disappointing season. I don't care what anyone says, it has been very, very poor return on their expectations and their, you know, the way they started the season. There's some really bad performances. Europe was an utter disaster, the Cup was a disaster. And then they just managed to fall into third place. yeah, it's just not good enough. And I think I fully believe that Liam Buckley will be the manager next year, but there'll be an extra few pair of eyes on him when he starts off next season.
Be interesting to get Sligo's fans' thoughts on that. I know we have quite a few lads that tune in from Sligo and from their supporters club podcast as well, and I know they've been critical of Buckley over recent weeks, but be interesting to get their thoughts now that they have qualified for Europe. So feel free to get in touch, lads. John, just would you agree or disagree with Gary there?
Yeah, I think it's because they had such a good start to the season. I think this is why the likes of Gary so critical towards it. I think if you'd have offered Sligo fans third place at the start of the season, they would have jumped at it.
Mm.
I don't think there was any expectations that they were going to start as well as they did. You know, because there was players there that just appeared from nowhere that started playing really well. And I don't think anybody could have wished them to have the start that they had. So I think that's where probably the expectations got a little bit too high. And that's where maybe the criticism's coming in now, that they couldn't expand on that start to the season.
But Jesus, like the way they went out of Europe, I would have been disgusted at the Town loss against them.
Yeah,
like that was horrendous. Yeah. And then to lose in the cup as well, like their season was over in June or July, whenever it was. But it's over months. Like Longford Town season lasted longer than theirs.
I think they had such a bad effect after going out of Europe.
Yeah, the reaction was poor.
A horrendous run, didn't they? Yeah, the reaction to it was really.
And as we pointed out, there has been factors. There's been injuries. There's been players that have left and all the rest. But I think overall, I think most people would agree the reaction just wasn't good enough. But they've got into Europe in the end. And John, they've started building next year already. Johnny Kenny signed a new 2-year deal. Greg Bulger signed a new deal. I'm sure they'll have players on their shopping list as well to try and hopefully get them maybe through a couple of rounds in Europe or win a cup next year or be that little bit closer to Shamrock Rovers. So. They have to just learn from the mistakes maybe of the last couple of months and try and put that to good use next year.
Yeah, I think the 2-year contract for Johnny Kenny is more about getting a transfer fee for him and
maybe
looking at the future with the likes of him, because no doubt.
But look, again, if they qualify for Europe, get the European money, if they get Kenny on a couple of year deal and someone wants to pay a big transfer fee, that's good club management. That's good business.
It is, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And you wouldn't, you know, you'd say that's a smart bit of work, but I think. You know, it's all right qualifying for Europe, but they've got to make a better stab of it than they did this season. Gary's dead right to criticise what they did there. They were so disappointing.
And we should point out as well, just while we're talking about Johnny Kenny, I think when I was doing the Longford game on the Monday, there was 5 or 6 players on the field from Sligo that all came through their academy. And anyone that listened to the Joey special last week heard him talk about the work that went in there at the club while Gavin Dykes was there and building the academy, and that they're getting the fruits of that now. It's probably a blueprint. I know everyone talks about Shamrock Rovers Academy as well, but we're starting to see some real success stories now from the likes of Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers in terms of youth development.
Yeah, and that's only positive for the future, for not just for the league, but for the clubs as well. Because
for Irish football,
like we say, Johnny Kenny, who knows, he could be an international in the future. And you know that they've done the right thing tying the contract, and I'm sure there is a clause in there that if there's a sufficient bid in for him, then he'll be allowed to leave. But you know, it's smart stuff from Sligo. But you know, I'd really like to see them step it up next year, and you know, not just take the little bit of money from qualifying for Europe, but actually making a stab of it. Mm. Because you know, they would definitely need to improve on that, you know, just for the league's sake as well as for Sligo's sake.
Now, we've got one more item to discuss on our chalkboard, but before we move on, just while we've been talking about Sligo and Europe, for anyone that missed the Joey Ndoh special last week, here's a little clip I thought was very interesting. Joey Ndoh talking about the mentality of Irish players holding them back in Europe. Then, do you think there was a mentality issue that Irish players didn't believe in themselves enough?
No, it's still the same mentality. They don't believe. Because when Shamrock went to the group stage, when Dundalk went to the group stage, what happened? Do they compete? No, they don't. Have they learned something? No, they didn't.
Yeah, interesting stuff from Joey and Doe. Again, if you haven't heard the Joey and Doe special yet, you'll find it wherever you get your podcast from. You'll see it in the feed there, along with all our other episodes, and you'll find it on our website, betweenthestripes.net. But lads, one more item on our chalkboard here. This potential for a merger between Cabinteely and Bray, John. What do you make of that?
Well, as I harked to earlier in the podcast, it was only two or three seasons since they were going to have an academy to match Barcelona, wasn't it, Bray? So, you know, I don't know what happened between that and now. I'm surprised by this one, really am. It must be very difficult for Cabinteely to have a club at this level. If you think of, you know, maybe the lack of gates, the lack of sponsorship, it must be very, very tricky. We've talked about the money in the league, or the lack of it, trying to do this year in, year out, and at amateur level. So, you know, from that side of things, I can probably understand it. But, you know, Bray would be a proud club with, you know, years. And I'm very surprised that's a way that they're looking at. And I wasn't surprised today to see there is already a petition out against it online. You know, fans are very, very much anti this and against this. And
I mean, what an awful time for this to come out in from a Bray perspective.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, they're what, a couple of matches from being promoted.
Yeah.
It's the timing is very, very strange. And yeah, I think the reaction that it's got from fans tells you all that they think about it, that it's not a good thing.
Gary, I suppose from an outside perspective, looking in, you'd say this is a better deal for Cabinteely than Bray, because as John points out, Bray's the one that has, you know, the long, long standing history in the League of Ireland. Cabinteely have only come in recently. And I think we spoke about a few times on this show that we were quite enthused about Cabinteely's 5-year plan that they brought out that time, and their talk of moving back to Cabinteely and trying to establish the club there, and all the young players that have come through that club and everything else. And now it looks like there's going to be a merger here with Bray. What's your takings on this?
It's something I wasn't expecting. I don't really see the point of it. I do see the point of it, but I'd be very against it. More so from a Bray perspective, you know, they've, I'm going to say, the richest history of football in the league.
But in terms of club size, they're probably fairly comparable to Longford Town in terms of fan base, trophies won down the years. Both clubs have decent little grounds there. If this was Longford and a proposed merger with Athlone was being discussed, can you imagine the reaction? From us,
God, I'd never be seen again. I'd be chained to the.
We'd be on hunger strike outside the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no. And I didn't see.
That'd be very
reaction.
Tough for you, Burko.
You'd be the letter, John.
No post match kebabs.
Yeah,
I know. Kebab shops would be bankrupt around Longford and
around the league.
No, I just think, yeah, I was expecting a more, you know, immediate response from Bray fans. You know, I know they're playing the playoff at the weekend and, you know, the big Galway in the end. But Janie Mack, I was very surprised to see this. And, you know, it doesn't seem to make a huge pile of sense from a Bray Wanderers perspective. Cabo, on the other hand, you know, they're new into the league. They probably need time to a few years in the league, which I have done.
Well, I think John is right. I think this, where they are there in Stradbroke, is not ideal for trying to build a League of Ireland club.
I don't think anyone would disagree
with that.
They need to go somewhere else. They need their own home ground.
But it's easy saying that. Who's going to finance that? And even John says, why would Bray consider this? We don't know what's going on there, Bray. Maybe the owners are feeling the strain of trying to, you know, compete with some of the clubs in the first division that have bigger budgets, and you know, maybe this is for them making sense, but from a supporter's point of view, it doesn't. We don't know the insides and out of this deal, but I think the
wasn't there talk of it being Bray Cabo next year, Cabo Bray the following year.
Yeah, and then a new name. Yeah,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, I'm absolutely.
And it makes the league look like a laughing stock if you ask me.
Yeah, well, look, we're doing enough on our own to do that without bringing this type of stuff in as well. But yeah, that's mad stuff altogether, and it does make it.
And then it's going to let's say Bray stay in the first division next year. They don't get promoted, and the two clubs become one. That leaves then a space again. Are we going to have the whole Shamrock Rovers 2 fiasco all over again?
Oh, who knows? Well,
Dublin CFC.
The only people talking about Shamrock Rovers 2 are still Shamrock Rovers fans. You know, don't forget, folks, that happened before a pandemic. But anyway, I wouldn't even... That's far down the list of concerns. You know, a lot has to happen between now and then.
I just think this is... again, I would disagree with this because there's talk, and very positive talk, I must say, something that maybe the FAI is getting right for once. I think Jonathan Hill has spoken about his desire in his role to create some sort of a pyramid system in this country, and there's talk of a third tier now where university clubs and clubs from the non-leagues can play and be promoted to the first division. So if Cabinteely are maybe struggling at first division level, maybe the third level for a couple of years, maybe they can find their feet there, and it might be a little bit cheaper to run the club there. Maybe they can hack some sort of plans there and build the club at that level. I just don't see the point in taking these clubs out of the league to create one club.
No, and certainly not. And then, you know, like Cabinteely have such a huge underage structure as well.
Yeah.
And that kind of cuts off the association with the senior team, you know, kind of keep going up the levels here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very strange one. I know it's very early days as well, but I would be against it. And I hope Bray fans become more vocal in their opposition to this, because I think Bray Wanderers will be a loss to the league.
Yeah. Right, lads, we will move on to something a little bit more familiar. Hope our listeners enjoyed that little chalkboard segment there. But we will move on, and we will get stuck into the Predictions League this week. And just to update our listeners, this is serious stuff now, folks. If you haven't been following it for the last couple of weeks, unfortunately, John Breyer is running away with the league, so we'll both be buying him a case of beer for Christmas, Gary. But we did ask a couple of weeks ago our listeners to send in forfeits for whoever finishes bottom of the league. And the decision reached was whoever finishes bottom is going to have to wear an Athlone Town shirt doing an end of season show. And I can tell you, with only a couple of rounds left to go, myself and Gary are tied on 141 points down at the bottom. So this is squeaky bum time. This is serious stuff. So, John, we'll go to you first. You're the league leader. You're going to be crowned champion. We can call you champion-elect, I think. And we'll go Pats v Harps first this week in the Between the Stripes LOI Podcast Prediction League.
Big match this one, isn't it, for Harps? Huge match. We know Pats are safe in Europe. But Harps, Waterford.
Just before you, yeah, I was just going to, you were saying off air there, very interesting. Harps and Waterford essentially have the exact same end to the season.
They do, but they're reversed fixtures, yeah. So Harps have Pats away and then Longford at home, and Waterford have Longford away and then Pats at home. So
Harps are 7 goals better off at this moment in time.
Yeah, so you'd think it's advantage Harps, but you just don't know, do you? It's with the form that Waterford are in, who knows? But I think they'll be very strong for whoever wins that playoff final anyway. But going back to the match, Harps need everything here, but I think they'll fall short. I'm going to go for a Pats win, but it'll be close, 2-1.
Gary, Pats took a bit of a thumping off Sligo at the weekend. And I know they've been rotating. They've been making 5 or 6 changes per game now in the build-up to the cup final. But do you think Stephen O'Donnell will be keen to get a reaction out of them? He won't want them going into that cup final with bad momentum behind them. So is he going to field a fairly strong team here and ask his players to go out and put Harps to the sword?
I think he has to. You know, that was a very poor result last week. Players want to be chancing their arm to for a starting position in the final, of course. I think he has to put out a stronger team than he has done in recent weeks. I'm going to follow John 2-1, but it could be 3 or 4, maybe not 4-1, but I think Pats will definitely get the win here at the weekend, because Right, you can't have this type of rubbish going on, losing to teams that are far below you, running up to an FA Cup final. It's just not on. So I think it's going to be a stronger team put out by Stephen O'Donnell this weekend.
Yeah, and I kind of just lost my trail of thought there because we were rudely interrupted by the local GA club at the door looking for a few pounds there. But I think both you and John have gone for 2-1 to Pats there, Gary. But I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Just I thought they were quite poor against Sligo the other night. And they've just, they've got their eye off it at the minute. They know second is safe. They've got that eye on the cup final. I think it's hard to keep that momentum up as much as you might try and as much as the manager might shout at you. I think you're just always holding that little bit back inside. And as John has pointed out, this is a huge game for Harps. And I think they'll go up to Richmond and I think they might get something. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. We'll move on. This is another big one. Obviously, Sligo wrapped up that third spot. But for Derry City, they're in the battle for fourth. And then they have to get down on their knees and pray that that St. Pat's win the cup. So this is a huge game for them. Derry against Sligo, two teams that... Look, Sligo have got a couple of good wins in recent weeks, but Derry, they were unable to capitalise on the slip-up Sligo made before that. So how do you see this one playing out, John?
Well, it's one that Derry have to win. It's as simple as that, isn't it, to have any chance, really, of getting a European qualification place.
They've been poor of late, haven't they? Have you been surprised how poor Derry have been over the last few weeks, given the prize that's been on the line?
I have, because they had a little bump in form, didn't they? Mm. They had a really good spell, and you know, I think this probably says more about the teams, isn't it? Now they've just gone back off the boil again. But this is just critical, this one, isn't it? Absolutely critical, and they have to win it. And I've got them down as winning it. I don't know. I just think Sligo might. Now they've got that European place sorted. I don't know. I haven't been overly impressed with them. Longford were very, very unlucky against them, and Longford should have beaten them that day.
Yeah.
How on earth they lost, I don't know. Like Gary says, they've not been the same team since for a long time. And I'm going to go for a Derry win on this one. I'm going to go 2-0, actually.
2-0, yeah. That's the only thing that might make you side towards Derry, I think, is the fact that Sligo have done their business now and they're going to take the foot off the gas. But I think they need to end the season as strongly as possible, given the reasons we discussed earlier and the poor run that they did have up until now. But Derry, they're winless in the last four. Three of them have been draws. I've seen a good bit of them of late, and I don't know. They've been very, very flat. They're struggling to create chances. I don't see them having enough to win this. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. What do you think, Gary?
No, I'm going to go for a 1-0 Derry win here. I think. There's a lot more at stake. I think Sligo will be just delighted to be.
There's been a lot of stake in their recent games, and they have been able to pull their socks up.
Yeah, but now they're playing against someone who really doesn't care, because it's hard to see how Sligo cared in the last few months at all. But now they've got the one thing that they were playing for. They've achieved that, so like I think that's, you know, their season done and dusted, and that they've nothing else really to add to their lot at the moment. So I think Derry have a lot more to play for. It's up in the Brandywell. I think they'll get a 1-0 win.
Right, we will move on to the Dublin Derby, Bowes against Rovers. Bowes, they could have got this one moved, but they've decided to play it on the night it's scheduled. They're going to be without, I think, three of their players as a result. They'll be away on international duty. I think Rovers might be missing a couple as well, maybe. But look, Rovers obviously have the title wrapped up. Bowes are in a cup final, but this is a huge game for very obvious reasons. So how do we see this one playing out, John?
Well, I'm going for a home win on this one. This is always a cracker, isn't it? There's always some great talking points in these games. You remember Wardy with a flag and all this kind of stuff. So Rovers are done. They've won the league. You know, it's a question of how many they win the league by. They won't want to lose this one against Bowes. But obviously, we talked, it's critical for Bowes as well as this match, isn't it? So I think they'll edge this one. They're always close. If you go on the table, Rovers win, but you never go on the table with these Bowes Rovers. Bowes 2-1 for me.
Okay. I can see this being quite a typical derby. I think this will be full-blooded, given the bad blood there clearly is between the two clubs at the moment. I know Rovers have that title wrapped up, but they won't want to lose to Bows. Bows obviously have a huge amount to play for here in terms of maybe a chance at Europe, and they'd love to get one over Rovers, obviously. But I think the two teams will cancel each other out. I can see this has been a scrappy old Dublin derby. I think this might be a 0-0. Gary?
Yeah, I can see where you're going from there. I just don't have any faith, you know, in Bows at all, regardless of the fact that Rovers have won the league, you know, still a Dublin derby.
And they got their Player of the Month award today as well.
Yeah, after all their whinging and moaning, probably deserved as well.
100% deserved, and I had a bit of a laugh and a joke about it on the BTS Twitter. I said, Stephen Bradley likes this tweet, and in came the comments that we're obsessed with Rovers and anti-Rovers bias and everything else. So some people obviously don't get their bowl of humour of a Tuesday morning, but look, that's the way it is.
Somebody don't listen to me, because I've been raving about them all season how they're going to win the league by a country mile.
That's why we kick you off every few weeks.
Yeah. Well, we've been saying the same. Like, they have been, you know, well, they haven't been the best.
They've been the best team in this league, and
but they haven't been the best version of themselves, let's say.
No.
They should have been really blowing everybody away, considering the firepower and ability they have. So, but yeah, just on this particular game, I don't really see much in it myself. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw here.
Yeah, I can see that. All right. Right, it's a huge game for Waterford. Longford Town, as well, as John pointed out, are going to have a huge say on how the final table looks, because they play Waterford at home here, and then their final game is away to Finn Harp. So the team's in ninth and eighth position. So Town, I suppose, owe it to the rest of the league to try their very best. And as we know, they always will do that. They always try their hardest to players, but they often come up short on quality. And I'm afraid I can see the same outcome here. I can see there's been quite an easy night at the office for Waterford. I think they're very, very strong on the counter-attack. So if Longford do decide that it's the last home game of the season and they're going to come out on the front foot and have a go, I think that'll suit Waterford, and they'll sit in and they'll wait for the gaps to appear. And unfortunately, with this Town defence, the gaps often do appear, and I think Waterford will have the players to punish Longford. And whereas if Longford decide to sit in and just try and get a result like they've done in most games this season, then Waterford know, then they've been through them games and they've come out winners in the other three. So I think no matter what tactics Longford take up here, I think Waterford start off as favourites, and I can see them being convincing winners. I'm going to go for a 3-0 win to Waterford.
Wow. Do you want me to go next?
Yeah, please. You're the most pessimistic when it comes to the Town predictions, but I
might surprise you tonight.
I think we just need this season over and done with. So I think a Waterford win is coming.
And you know, I went to a match a week or two ago, watched a Longford Town home match, and I was actually couldn't wait to go home. That's how I felt. I think that's just
the past
how
game.
Bad the season's been, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, on the matter of this one, 2-0 Waterford. I think you're dead right. I think Waterford have way too much for Longford. Longford can't wait for the season to end. You know, they looked nothing different. I thought they might look different against Dundalk.
Yeah.
But no, it's just revert to type. You know, with this same formation, same dull ideas of playing strikers on the wing and midfielders at fullback and the likes. And I don't know. I think that's just I think the season's worn me out, Kieran. I've nothing really positive to say about Longford. And I think Waterford will have way too much with, you know, the likes of, you know, Martin always scores against us, doesn't he? And you know, they've got some good players, and you know, their form is completely different to our form. It doesn't seem too long ago that we were ahead of them.
I think I tallied
the rest was history.
Yeah, I think I tallied it up today. I think it's 23 league games Bertram's been in charge for. I think he's gathered up either 32 or 34 points. So, as John said, a different level of form to what Longford have displayed. But Gary, John points out that Waterford has some very tidy players. He mentions Martin, who has scored a few against the Town this season. But I know when you were at Daily Mount a couple of weeks ago, you were very impressed with Phoenix Patterson, and he's one that's caught my eye as well. So tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, he actually caught my eye at the UCD Bowl for the Waterford UCD Cup game.
Right.
I thought he was extremely lively. No, he was good at the Daily Mount game as well, but I just noticed them in the ball. Really good attacking player. He doesn't seem like, you know, that he's not the most imposing of statures on the pitch, but really confident on the ball, takes it down and can drive towards goal, and he can create a few chances. And he did create a couple of chances for Waterford and Daly Mount after the cup game. So a really good young player. I think Waterford are on to a winner there, and I'm sure Mark Bertram will want to keep him as well, looking into next season. Now, obviously, that depends on where they end up, in what division they end up. Just as a side on that, there is absolutely no chance a first division team are going to beat anybody in the Premier. So I think that's they're safe enough. But yeah, just on the game, I think poor old Town have, you know, tried and tried all season, and you know, just hasn't worked out in too many games, if any at all. So. But I'm going to say true to me form and say 2-0 Town.
Well, look, if I finish,
why you bottom of the league, yeah, mate?
Well, he's not. He's joint bottom, and if I finish bottom, then you know I should never be allowed to host this podcast again, because he's gone with Longford in every single game this season. And I'm still joint bottom with him. So if I finish bottom and I'm sitting here in an Athlone jersey, then I think serious questions need to be asked. But look, we'll move on. Gary, I think, no, you weren't at this one, obviously, but you were at one of the playoff games, Galway, weren't you? You were at Galway.
Bray and Galway last week, the first leg. I can say without reservation or anything, it was probably one of the worst games of football I've been at in my entire life. I thought both teams should be absolutely ashamed of themselves walking off that pitch. It was absolutely horrendous. Now, I mean horrendous. Lord bless us, I've seen under six games with more quality and intensity than what both teams displayed in that game. And I think I texted you at the time that there's absolutely zero chance. Longford Town would have been able to rest 10 players to play that playoff game. Because if any of those teams, if either Bray or Galway got through, that Longford Town would have just blown them away with a fart. That's how bad that game was. And I have absolutely no problems in saying that UCD will beat the absolute piss out of Bray or Galway. Bray now. I think Bray, there'll be an element in Bray fans that is we should definitely merge with Cabo, because UCD are going to blow them apart.
Well, that's why I'm asking you about the game, because I want your predictions. So go on. I think it's over one leg this as well. I actually thought it was going to be over two, but it's over one. So go on, give us your score line here.
For UCD and Bray?
Yeah. I know it's not for a couple of weeks yet, but...
Yeah. 5-0 UCD.
I saw a great... Wow. A great tweet by a fan today, just on that match, and about Galway, and they were questioning Caulfield and saying he was a dinosaur playing prehistoric football. What did you think to that, Gary?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree, but that's a known entity since you know he's took over the reins of Cork. He never played that exciting a football. I don't think that's a.
I think we should. I think we should talk about Galway though, actually, because I got a text from someone during the week, and they said they actually asked us to bring this up about Galway. Full time team playing in the first division on a massive budget, and this person was kind of in the know, and he told me what a rough idea of what their budget was. I'm not going to say it here, but I was actually stunned, and they can't get through a round of the playoffs. I know John Caulfield is a great CV in terms of what he won and everything, but I think you're right, Gary, and John, you're right. There's always been questions over his style of football. You remember some of the performances in Europe with Cork were absolutely horrific to watch.
Oh,
I mean, is it good enough what has been produced there this year? There's no excuses. He came in at the end of last year. He had time to look at what was there. He put his squad together. He got the backing, and they can't get through a round of the playoffs. I know there was a Shellas team there with a big budget that it was always going to be difficult to win the league, but they didn't come anywhere close to winning the league. And then they didn't even come anywhere close to getting through the playoffs. It's not really good enough.
It's not at all.
Go on, Gary, you go first.
No, it's not good enough. And, you know, we talked about it earlier on the season that they weren't putting teams to the sword and not being professional in their games. You know, a lot of late-minute or last-minute goals and equalizers and winners and screamers from 35, 40 yards to get the result that they needed. That's not really good enough when you're trying to, when you have all of those things to hand and all of that capability on the pitch and you're not able to, you know, get any produce out of it. It's not really good enough. And I think I was, when I went to that Bray Galway game during the week, I was like, you know, I'm expecting, you know, lay down a marker here for the second leg. And no one did. As I said, it was one of the worst games I've ever witnessed. And a very big disappointment. But I wasn't overly surprised with the way Galway approached the game. They did very little attacking-wise, or, you know, they didn't add any excitement to it. They didn't have any flair or, you know, geez, maybe we might get a goal and have an advantage to bring him back to AMDC Park. That was never on the cards. But John Caulfield himself, he does have a lot to answer for. To not get through a round of the playoffs, but score, he didn't score in the playoffs either. And they, as you said, they weren't close to Shells at all. So there's a lot of questions marks there as well. Over John Caulfield, but the style of football that has been played by John Caulfield teams in over the last number of years has been extremely poor. I think they won the Dublin 2017, wasn't it?
Yeah.
2017, yeah. And that's just true. The best stat out of that entire league that year was Sean Maguire was a top scorer at the end of the season when he left during the summer.
Yeah.
So that shows how the hay he made for Cork, because if you remember, Cork didn't really finish the league that strongly. They were being caught. And that was after Sean Maguire left.
Yeah.
And then it goes to show how poor the league was as a whole when a lad played there for half the season, wasn't even there anymore, was it still the top scorer? Yeah, I think question marks have to be players at John Caulfield's head, which, you know, I'd probably get another season of it to get out of it. And, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I wouldn't be very happy as a Galway United fan.
I'm just going to double check now that you want to go with that 5-0. That wasn't just blood flow to the head.
Not at all.
Okay, no. Right. We'll stick it in. John, give me your prediction. Give me your prediction for Bray against Tuesday in the playoffs, in the first division playoff final, as they call it. Don't know why they call it that when there's another game to go. But anyway.
Well, we know UCD like a lot of goals, so I can see where Gary's coming from. And I think UCD will win this one quite comfortably as well. I'm going to go 3-0.
Well, I was going to go for that, but UCD like to leak an old goal too. So I think UCD will go 3-0 and then concede 2 later on, but they'll have enough. I'm going 3-2.
Right, just before we go on, lads, what on earth persuaded both of you to plump for Galway at the start of the season? Because I'm still perplexed by this. And, you know, you've just had, you know, said about him playing such negative football for the last few seasons, but you still went for Galway, Gary.
I probably overrated Caulfield as a manager. I thought his organization would be enough in the first division because it's often the best defense to get you promoted. I thought that would be enough. And I probably underestimated Ian Morris's ability to bounce back this year. I thought that they just ended last year so horribly that, you know, they were going to have a slow start and he was going to be in bother. But isn't it funny? He got the job done. He's the one that got sacked, and Caulfield came up a long way short, and he's probably going to be there next year.
Yeah, that's
football
that's
a is a funny
world.
Old game, huh?
Isn't it just?
No, just to answer your question, John, I feel disgusted at myself, but I did kind of echo Kieran's idea that Shelburne had finished so poorly. Ian Morris was hanging around. Would he get the back in? Would he get the players? Would they be able to recover from that disappointment? I had question marks about that. And then I was quite impressed with Galway's revival when John Caulfield came in at the back end of last season of the first division. So, you know, I was quite positive thinking about Galway.
And the fact they got into the playoffs under him last year, you're thinking, right, him of all managers is going to use that experience. He's going to weed out the weak ones, get him what he needs. He knows what's missing now.
And look, he probably brought in about 12 right backs as well. So, you know, that has to be a question mark over his recruitment too. But
I think he got more wrong than right, didn't he? There's certainly a good couple of players down there, but there's plenty of duds as well that he brought in.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so, and he has an answer for that. You know what I mean? Like, that's another poor ending to the season. You know, last season was a success, got to the playoffs, got into the first division playoff final. Lost against a team who were performing at an extremely high level.
They got pumped against Longford in that playoff final last year. While we're on the subject of Darragh Doyle, that was Longford's best performance under him. The football they played that night was incredible.
Yeah, it was.
Smashed Galway off the pitch.
Yeah, Galway hadn't a prayer that night. It was great to see a score, of course, but I think, you know, You could say put that down as a success, because when he came in and changes he made midway through the season and the way they were playing, but you know it's poor football, it's, you know, puke football as has been said in the past, and you know when they need to do something special they haven't been able to do it, and I think that's a characteristic of John Caulfield. You know, when they need to do something in Europe they haven't delivered, they need to do something in the league. Often enough, they haven't delivered. So, you know, it's going to be hard to see now where they go from here, considering the investment that was put in this season in a full-time setup and such a poor return.
Yeah, look, as we said, it is certainly a funny old game. And we've discussed some very serious topics there tonight at times. So I think it's only right we end the show with a little bit of humour. And again, a little clip from the Joey and Doe special. Here's Joey speaking about how he dealt with one abusive fan in particular.
So I asked him, listen, why every time you come here and you start to insult him, he's like, I just add the petrol on fire. Well, he start talking. I say, okay, you know what? Because you bought your ticket to watch me. So today I'm going to play just for you. He said, what do you mean? I said, no, wait. So that night, everything I was doing, every skill I was doing, I would just look at him. And I remember they give me a ball at the line near the corner flag. And two players were coming. So I lift the ball over the head of the two players. And then the third one kicked the ball out. So we had a corner. And the ball just landed in front of his seat. So I took the ball and I looked at him and say, are you satisfied now? He never speak again. He never, because he knew that, I'm better not piss that guy off.
Yeah, again, if you haven't heard that Joey and Doe special, do go and check it out. It's very, very good listening. But lads, before we go, we're facing into an international week. I'm off to the Aviva myself on Thursday. Looking forward to that for the Portugal game. And then Ireland away to Luxembourg. Would have loved to have been making that trip. But unfortunately, I used up all my annual leave following Longford this year. So that's the price you pay. But
You used up or wasted, Kieran?
We've been harsh enough tonight, haven't we? We got some nice kebabs out of it. We'll take the positives. But
you never waste travelling for football. I'll tell you. You always make a good day out of it.
That's true. Right, how do we see Ireland and Portugal going, Gary?
Yeah, it's good that Stephen Kenny has had a couple of wins under his belt in the meantime since the first game. And of course, now that it's, you know, essentially meaningless for Ireland, other than Portugal are coming to Dublin, which has been a big... I saw him at the weekend and he played well, but he was in a team of dirt. So,
are we taking bets on overs and unders? How many Ronaldo 7 jerseys we'll see in the Aviva on Thursday night?
Yeah, I think that's disappointing. The amount of fans that are heading the game because the they have a Sky Sports subscription is quite disappointing. But look, you know, you're going to have that from an Ireland perspective. But you have the game myself. Shout out to our friend Derek for sorting me out. But yeah, like, look, it's disappointing to see that Ireland, you know, like, they've essentially nothing to play for. Do you know what I mean? It's just a bit of pride. So I think they've plenty of that at the moment. I fully stand behind Stephen Kenny and his, you know, current position as manager and the current direction he's going in. And we saw during the week there that other players have endorsed him as well, so that's good to see. So I think you know, even a draw would be a very good result. Yeah. Of course, a win would be great, but I think a draw is very achievable for Ireland, and we can continue the building process that is going on at the minute.
I suppose, John, the ideal scenario, as Gary said, is a draw here, but even if you put in another respectable performance like we saw in Portugal and then maybe get something against Luxembourg. I think, again, people are probably underestimating Luxembourg. They came to the Aviva and they passed Ireland off the pitch. Now, I'd like to think Ireland have improved since then, but we've talked about it on this show in terms of their clubs in Europe, how they've improved. I think maybe the average Irish fan that doesn't follow football maybe as deeply as some of us, they look at Luxembourg and think, ah, yeah, you know, Ireland should be winning 3 or 4-0 out there. It's not going to be that simple, is it?
No, it's not. And one of their best players, one of the three Thill brothers, I think. I don't know how many of them play for Luxembourg, but he was playing for Sheriff there, you know, that shocked
Madrid.
Madrid in Europe, you know. And, you know, they have some decent players. But I think, you know, I was encouraged by the sellout for the Portugal match. And then I thought, well, how many of this is the older Man United, Ronaldo and Bruno fanboys that are snapping up tickets? So I would have that same worry as you. I like to think that it's the Irish public getting behind Kenny and the teams, because I think recent performances have improved. And, you know, we've talked about in detail how it's great that he's giving young lads a chance, you know, that wouldn't have been anywhere near the squad under the previous managers. One thing I do have to raise is the new away shirt, Kieran, because it's almost like somebody's gone away and said, you know, that kit that we brought out, that blue one, that away kit, really, really liked it. Great, nice design and what have you. They brought this horrendous orange away number out, which looks terrible. And, you know, I don't know what they're thinking about there, Kieran. Perhaps you can enlighten me with those away shirts.
It lights itself up. I don't think you need anyone to enlighten the fact for you. But I think a lot of people, myself included, when they seen the commemorative blue jersey, I thought it was horrendous when I seen it first online. But then when I actually seen the players wearing it on the telly, I thought, geez, that's nice. I kind of regret not buying it now, although I'm not going out and paying 70 or 80 quid or whatever it was. But the orange one is horrendous. I don't need to see it on a player. I don't need to ever see it. It looks like a very, very bad training top, or even worse, it looks like something you used to get at the FEI camps when you were 15.
Yeah, I can't deny that. It just doesn't look good at all, does it? I mean, it looks cheap more than anything. There's no thought gone into it.
Whereas, oh no, I'm not sure if you saw. Maybe you saw, Gary. There was a kind of a write up on the design concept.
Oh God, here we go.
Not sure if any of you seen that. I can't really phrase it now. I can't really recall it properly. But basically, it was talking about how the stadiums have been so empty, and now that the fans are back, they wanted the players to stand out more. I should actually really go and Google it and find it, but I can't remember where I seen it. But it was absolutely hilarious that they were trying to put a concept on this. It's horrendous.
Oh dear me! This is how it's like designers try and make a cheap car look like a BMW or something, and they come out with the same utter rubbish spiel. But for me, it's a crap kit, Kieran. Don't buy it. It's terrible.
But I actually remember, you might remember as well, Gary, a couple of years ago, they brought out kind of orange training gear. And I don't think, I seen maybe a handful of people with it around the Aviva. And I never seen it again. Very few bought it.
Yeah, did it have like a bit of a navy twang to it as well? Or maybe like a light grey or something?
Yeah, I think so.
I do remember it as well, and I was glad I wasn't seeing much of it, and especially even like particularly like before games or at the few away games I've been at as well, like you'd see a lot of different variations and eras of gear.
Yeah, the retro stuff, people are mad for that. So
exactly. But
and that's why the blue away one was great, I thought, because it looked very retro, didn't it? And I really like that,
but they are. I think they're releasing. I think after the backlash to the orange kit, they threw out a teaser, didn't they, for some retro training gear, zippy jackets, and all the rest, and that got a positive reaction. But I think maybe that's a route they should have explored more, because this orange kit is horrendous.
Yeah, not madding it at all. But look, I think you're gonna have to. The story about, where it came from and the idea, that'd be a fairly regular occurrence, have to sell the party line or whatever.
Yeah, so I will find that for anyone that hasn't seen it. I'll find it and I'll post it on the BTS Twitter. It's a good read.
Do so. It'll give me a chuckle tonight.
If you're looking for a chuckle. Well, look, I'm sure plenty were chuckling listening to us this evening. We have certainly some strong opinions. Not everyone will agree with us, but as ever, we really appreciate everyone that tunes in. So that was a slightly different show tonight. As I said, we usually, as you all know, we'll have two or three guests on with us, but given that we didn't have our normal show last week and there's been so much going on around the league, we just thought we'd change the format up a little bit tonight and just thrash it out and give our views. So hopefully you've enjoyed listening. A huge thanks to Gary and to John for their company tonight, and again thanks to our listeners. You know the crack by now, you can subscribe to the pod wherever you get your podcast from, or you can subscribe via the website betweenthestripes.net. if you've been listening all season long and you appreciate the effort we put in, then feel free to buy us a beer via buymeacoffee.com/btsloi, or again you can do that through the website. But for this week, it's Kieran, John and Gary signing off. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.